All right, we're starting here at the bottom of Chav Gimel Amud Bet. The Gemara is still dealing with the issue of the Mishnah, is how we explain Rav Meir's position when it comes to the Edim. How is it that the litigants can go ahead and be posel the Edim at will? So we just had an answer at the bottom of, through the end of Chav Gimel Amud Bet, was the possibility that was introduced by Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Yochanan. And we're talking about Shtei Kitei Edim. Shtei kitei edim, and the question here is whether it's tzarich levarer or ain't tzarich levarer. Right, two gashonot and Rashi, who holds what? But that's, according to the Rav Dimi, that's the way to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Meir. Now we have Piyat Ravin, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. So Ravin and the name Rabbi Yochanan suggests a new one. Reisha, the beginning of the Mishnah is be'edim psulim v'dayanim kisherim. Talk about a case where the edim are found to be pasul and the dayanim are fine. So migo the pasli edim, pasli nami dayone. So since we've already cast aspersions on his choice of Edim, we can also then cast aspersions on his choice of a Dayan. Seifa, the second half of the Mishnah is by Dayanim Psulim Edim Ksherim. The other way around. We have the Dayanim are found to be Pasul, and his Edim are found to be Ksherim. Again, the Migo, the Pasle Dayanim, Pasle Nami Edim. Since we already question his authenticity in bringing whatever he does to the case. Here, if Dayanim are found to be problematic, then we also cast aspersions on his choice or his bringing of Edim to the case. So, Matkiflo Rav, Bishlam, Omigo, the Pasle Edim, Pasle Nami Dayone. Right, fine. If you want to say because the Edim are bad, then also the Dayanim are, we're going to let go of them. There, at least, you can replace the Dayanim. You can go to another base then. You can find another Dayanim. Amigo de pasle dayani pasle nami edim. If you're going to say there's amigo that we get rid of the dayanim are gone, so let the edim go. Vayedim tuleka. This is all his evidence in the case. You've just thrown out his evidence in the case. He has nothing left. What else is he going to do? How is he going to bring new edim? Well, it says lo tzricha diikakat acheret. So now Rav Dimi, you can see what's happening here. We have Ravin and Rav Dimi bringing a member from Rabbi Yochanan, and they're both going to end up in the same place, which is that we're actually talking about two kitei edim. So that's exactly what here. Ita katacheret. So how leka katacheret? What's the din? If there isn't another katedim, my, what is the din? Achanami, the little matzi pasle. Then according to Rav, you wouldn't be able to posel. And the Gemara says, I know the Rav Dimi. That's exactly what you just said, Rav Dimi. When there are two sets of edim, Rabbi Meir says you can go ahead and posel the one set of edim. There's only one set of edim. You cannot be posel them. So now you've just, Rav Dimi and Ravin, in the end, lalocha are turning out to be the exact same conclusion. Which is two edim, yes, one edim not, and that's the whole position of Rabbi Meir. Mar says, ikabeinayu migo. The difference between the two positions is this concept of migo. The mar sever amin migo, mar sever lo amin migo. One holds we do say migo, one holds we don't say migo. Rashi says something unbelievable here, but it says, Rabin sovar amrinun migo bi'alma. Then in general we hold of this idea concept called migo. Whereas Rav Dimi, we don't say migo bi'alma. Rashi says this has like implications throughout Shas, whether we had hold of this concept called Migo. According to Ravin, we do hold of this concept called Migo throughout Shas, whereas Rav Dimi says we don't say Migo generally in Shas. Now fine, that'd be, it's interesting. The only problem is now that according to Rav Dimi, according to Ravin, if the Chochamim who say you cannot posel the Edim, that means that they hold you do not say Migo. That means according to Ravin, the Chachamim and Ravin, who we're going to pass them like, right, then we're going to say, no Migo throughout Shas. Right? Or according to Rav Dimi, no Migo throughout Shas. So no matter which, when you're going to pass them like the Chachamim, either case, you're going to end up with no Migo through Shas. It's a very difficult position, right? It's a pretty untenable position that you can't have Migo throughout Shas because of this situation. So a lot of the other Rishonim narrow it down, which makes a lot more sense here, to say the issue is here, in our case. It's a local issue of whether you say Migo here or not. Do you say Migo the Pasle Dayanim Pasle Edim, or do you not say it over here? Does the concept apply? In order to be Pusel the Edim, according to Ravin, it's simply enough that your judges were Pasol. That's enough to make it Pasol. According to Rav Dimi, you got to show up with some evidence that there's a problem with the Edim. So the difference between them over here is, do you say Migo from the judges to the Edim, or do you have to bring actual evidence that there's a problem with the Edim? And that it's a local machlokas about whether Migo applies in this instance, not whether Migo applies to Rachas. That can make more sense, that here, even though the Chamim over here are going to say no Migo, that's particular to this case. Rest the Shas, they're going to hold the Migo. So I think that's probably the easier way, or the probably the more logical way to explain the Gemara, otherwise you run into problems of how do you have Alocha, you're going to run into the fact that we don't have Migo throughout Shas. Right, Gufa, the Gemara now is going back to a statement by Reish Lakish earlier. Remember, Reish Lakish said, when Rav Meir in the Mishnah said, Rav Leish Lakish said, Amar Yeshua is Pekodosh. Pekodosh, Yomar Davarzeh. How could it be that a mayor ever said such a thing? A mayor would never have said that. Ela Tzni Edo. Change it to the singular form. Instead of being Eda, which is Edim Shelo, change it to Edo, which is Eid Shelo. But now, the Gemara is not questioning the second half, which they did already, about Eid versus Edav. The Gemara is asking about this Pekadosh business. What do you mean? Why does he call him Rabbi Meir Pekadosh? Anybody saw Reish Lakish learning the base medrash? Looked like he was two mountains crushing them together, right? He was a Okir Harim. He was fiery in his learning. He was a sharp. He was unbelievable mind in learning. So why is he calling Rabbi Meir Pekadosh? I mean, Reish Lakish, why is he giving such deference to Rabbi Meir if Reish Lakish was learning on such a high level? One says, wait a minute, what about Meir? Meir? I'm Ravina, alo kore, Rabbi Meir, bebeit midrash, kilo ker, hare harim, v'tokanam bezeze. Well, he has one up. Rabbi Meir is not only oker harim, but hare harim. The greatest mountains used to take them and crush them, and that Rabbi Meir was sharper, or even greater, right, than his understanding and its thought, than Rabbi Reish Lakish. And so Reish Lakish gave him deference, because Rabbi Meir was on a higher level than him. So that's why he says, Pekadosh. So that's one of the answers. One possible answer here is that Reish Lakish is actually paying deference to him because he was a sharper learner than Reish Lakish. The other possibility, which is the second answer here, Sachi Kamar, Bo Re, Kamen Mechabibim Zed Zed. The other answer is that Eino Chanami, Reish Lakish was a much sharper learner, and he did not have to pay him that deference, but he did anyway. And that's the Gemara's answer, Kamen Mechabibim Zed Zed. How nicely they treat each other. That he gave that deference to Rabbi Meir, despite the fact that he wasn't, quote-unquote, deserving of it. Nevertheless, Reish Lakish spoke in such a manner of giving the title Epe Kadosh. The point of the second answer is that you don't have to look at, but you don't have to look at the levels. It just, even if Reish Lakish was a higher level, the whole idea is to give, to treat each other in a proper manner.
Reish Lakish wasn't a Amora.
Right.
So they didn't even meet each other, they didn't know each other.
Right. No, but it just in his speech about him, that how he spoke, he could have just, his quote could have simply been, right, how could he say, Eidav? The fact that he used this term Pekadosh, which is a term of endearment towards Rabbi Meir, I think that's the Gemara's question. Why did he use such a, when he phrased it, he could have just said, he could, no, but he doesn't, you never see, you see Amoraim asking questions all the time, on a time, or how could you say this? This the Gemara is trying to amend a brisa. You don't see them using such terms of endearment. The fact that he used a term of endearment, I think, is what the Gemara is focused on here. Pekadosh is he didn't have to add that little phrase that made it sound like he really, you know, was talking to him in such a manner of respect and endearment. And I think that's what the Gemara is really focused on here. So I will point out that it's interesting over here that Reish Lakish was known to be a tremendously sharp and strong learner, and Rabbi Meir was also known that way. Right, also physically until he learned Torah, right? And then Rabbi Meir also was known that way. And the Gemara says that we don't pass an halacha like Rabbi Meir. Why? Because Rabbi Meir was so sharp. Right. So lo yirdu chaberav l'sof dato. They couldn't understand what he was saying, and therefore, even though Rabbi Meir was so sharp, and we should have passed an halacha like him, we don't pass an halacha because nobody could get to the sof dato. Gemara also says that when somebody's so sharp, like Shaul's just pointing out, that people make mistakes. Because you convince anybody of anything, right, you end up making mistakes because of that sharpness, because you can always get to where you need to be. So because of that, Reish Lakish understood Rabbi Meir. That's the Gemara's answer. The Gemara answers that Reish Lakish, who understood Rabbi Meir here, could have said Rabbi Meir said this because he was so sharp and he was making a mistake, he didn't really understand. But Reish Lakish is the one who comes along and says, yes, I'm like Rabbi Meir. I learned the same way as Rabbi Meir. And I think we can explain Rabbi Meir. I mean, that he tried to say that Rabbi Meir wasn't, that it was sharpness that made a mistake. No, Rabbi Meir's fine. I have a way to explain Rabbi Meir. So Reish Lakish coming, the person who understood where Rabbi Meir was coming from, is the one who's answering up for Rabbi Meir, which makes it a very nice idea that Reish Lakish is the one who says Pekadosh about Rabbi Meir. So now the Gemara comes to... Right. So here he continues, the Gemara says, okay, I'll show you this idea that when they learnt, they treat each other in such a manner. It's a case where Rabbi was sitting, and he says it's Asur on Shabbos to take cold water and bury it, or cover it up. Like it's Asur le hatmin et ha-chamin, you're not allowed to put hat items and be matmin them on Shabbos. So too, you can't be matmin cold items. You have cold water, you want to keep it cold, so you put it underground, you cover it up, that you can't do. Amar Lafav, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi is a Talmud sitting in front of Rabbi. He says, Abba, my father, meaning Rabbi Yossi, Hitir Latmina Tetzonei. He said it's permissible to be Hatmana with cold water. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi responds to Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Yossi, Kfar Orez Zakein. Rabbi Yossi spoke, no bachas like him. I'll back away. Look at the deference that was given from Rabbi towards Rabbi Yossi over here. Why? Had Rabbi Yossi been alive, he would have been one of the Talmidim in front of Rabbi. How do we know this? Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi was just as chashuv as his father, filled his father's shoes, and yet where was he sitting? He was sitting as a Talmid, lifnei Rabbi. Nevertheless, he was a Talmud before Rabbi. But Kamar, and how did Rabbi address him? Kfar Horez Akein. He gave such a title and a kavod towards Rabbi Yossi, even though he would have been a Talmud before Rabbi. The idea that there were no chinzel azeh, mechabavin azeh, they treat each other with such respect and deference. So Amar Rabbi Yoshia, so now we're going to see that's not true all the time. It depends where you live. My dichtiv, what does it say when it says in Zechariah Bechechli, Shnei Maklot, La'achad, Karati, Noam, U'la'achad, Karati, Chuvlin. I took two staffs, right here, talking about his, with the shepherds, I took two sticks. One of the sticks I called Noam, pleasant. The other stick I called Chuvlin, which will translate as meaning destroying or destruction. So Noam, what is Noam, pleasantness? Elu Tomidech Chamim Sheberetz Yisrael. These are Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, Shemen Imim Zela Zeb Alocha. They treat each other beautifully and nicely when it comes to Alocha. They try to work things out together. They speak in deference to each other. The two examples of being Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi and Reish Lakish, right, and Rabbi Meir. Both Reish Lakish and Rabbi resided in Eretz Yisrael. That's what we're saying, that they treat each other in such a beautiful manner. But Chovlin, the destroyers, Elu Talmidei Chachamim Shebabel. They go after each other in halacha. They beat each other up, bang each other. They don't speak. They scream at each other. And that's how they treat each other. He gives another example. Again, earlier on in Zechariah, this is Vayomer. Might be familiar, a little slightly familiar, because this is the perek, the earlier part of that perek we read as the haftorah for Balosha and Shabbos Chanukah. It says Vayomer Eile Shnei Bnei Hayitzar Haomdim. It's the end of that perek, and then it says Shnayim Zaitim Aleh. Shnayim Zaitim Aleh is earlier in the perek. That's actually part of what we do read for the haftorah. But Bnei Hayitzar Haomdim is at the end of the perek. It says these two Bnei Hayitzar. Bnei Hayitzar, the two people have been anointed b'shemen hamishcha that are standing there. So over there we're talking about Shemen Zayit. And then earlier in the parak it says, Shnayim Zaitim Aleh, that there are two Zaitim, are actually olive, or branches of the olives that are above. So Yitar, the olive oil, Amar Yitzchak, Eilu Tomei Nechomim Sheberetz Yisrael, Shenochim Zelazeh Ba'alacha. These are Tomei Nechomim in Eretz Yisrael that are sweet to each other, like a Shemen Zayit, smooth and nice to each other. Whereas Shnayim Zaitim Aleh, Eilu Tomei Nechomim Shebabel, Shemirurim Zelazeh Ba'alacha. They're bitter to each other in Alacha, Kizayit, like the Zayit. Right? Continue here, another in the other next parak in Zechariah. V'sayinai v'ayirev inei shtayim nashim yotzot v'ruach b'chanfeyem. So they were two women, and they're aloft with the wind that is caught under their wings. V'lahena chnafayim k'chanfei chasida. They have the wings like the wings of a chasida, which is mentioned as one of the birds that are not kosher, probably a stork of some sort. V'tisi'ena ha'ifa ben. It's interesting that the Gemara has ben Shemayim ben Aretz. The pasuk says ben Aretz uben Hashemayim, right? That they took this Eifa. The Eifa here seems to be a measurement or a weight. The Eifa that was between the earth and the heavens. Va'umar el malach hadover bi. I said to Malach, speaking to me, ano heima molichot et Eifa. Where are they taking these weights and these measurements? V'umelai livnot la bayit be'eretz shinar, to build a house in Babel. So again, here the hint of the Navi, or the Navi is talking about how they cheated in business and in weights, how they didn't treat each other properly. That is what is going to cause them to be pushed out to Bavel and to go into Galut. All right, but now the Gemara here is forced to focus on the point here of Livnot Labai Be'er Chinar. What does it mean to build a house in Er Chinar? And who are these two women? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Ben Yochai. These two women are Zu Chanufa. One of them is the flattery and hypocrisy. And the other one is Vigasut Aruach, and the other one is Hardiness. Shiardu the Bavel, that went to Bavel. So these two women, where are they going to land? They're going to land in Bavel. So Gemara says, "V'gasud ruach laBavel nachid." Is it really true that haughtiness ended up in Bavel? V'amar ma'arasarak habin gasud ruach yerdu leolam. There were 10 measurements of haughtiness that came to the world. Tisha natla elam. 9 of them went to elam. Elam being Shushana Bira Parasu Madai. Right? V'achad kol olam kulo. And the rest of the world shared the other one. So Gemara says, "In the Bavel nachid originally landed in Bavel. But then ended up rolling over into Elam." Make a lot of sense, because in the end, Parus Madai and Elam really are come out of Bavel. I mean, Belshazzar dies. Belshazzar, which is the grandson, he's the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. He's the last Melech Bavel. After he dies, Daryovish of Parus Madai takes over. So there's a transition, meaning that Paras and Madai really grow out of Bavel. So it makes sense that the Gasad HaRuach that came to Elam might have passed through Bavel. So where it says, Deganami, I can show you that this is true. Dechtiv livnot la bayit be'er chinar. How do I know that it wasn't staying in Be'er Chinar? Because it says, livnot la bayit be'er chinar. Shema mina. Now, what's the proof from this? Rashi, if you look in the Be'er Chanano, he says the same thing. Because it says, livnot la is in the singular bayit be'er chinar. So only one of the two women is going to stay in Be'er Chinar, which is what? The part of Chanufa. That will stay in Eretz Yisrael. But the Gasat HaRuach wasn't going to stay there permanently. It was going to roll to Elam. So that's one possibility. The Ramban al Torah quotes the La is missing. It's not a Mapik Hay. It's a La, which is a Hay Rafa. And Hay Rafa means something of not a permanent. La with a Mapik Hay would be something of permanent. And therefore, since it doesn't have a Mapik Hay over here, that indicates that it's not something that's going to move over and not remain in Bavel. Now, Vamamar, Siman Gasat HaRuach, Aniyut. Wait, now if you're going to say that it went to Bavel first and then ended up in Elam, Aniyut Bavel Nachit, right? So the we know from there that that they didn't have Gasut HaRuach because they didn't have Aniyut there. So Gemara says, but Elam, what about Elam? Elam had Gasut HaRuach, so where's the Aniyut? So Gemara says, my Aniyut, Aniyut Torah. That it's not poverty in the sense of monetary poverty, it's a sense in spiritual poverty. They lack that Aniyut in poverty in Torah. Dichtiv, how do I know that? Cholak Tanav Shadai Min La. That we have a sister who's young and not developed. That there they learned Torah, but they didn't teach Torah. So what's the difference? Rashi points out, who was the Navi in the time of Elam? That is, who's actually a Navi after Belshazzar. It's actually a Navi in the time of Belshazzar, and then later on in Daryavish and Koresh's rule, is Daniel. And Daniel was able to learn Torah, and he was a Navi Hashem, but he did not teach Torah, as opposed to Ezra, who resided in Bavel. Ezra, who resided in Bavel, was one who not only did he learn Torah, but he taught, and we had that pasuk before, that he was ra'oi to have the Torah given by him, like Moshe Rabbein, because he taught Chok U'Mishpat. So Ezra was not only limited by his learning of Torah, but he also taught Torah to Bnei Israel. So therefore in Bavel they had the positive side, which is that they're Melamei Torah. They did not have Aniyut Torah. Right there, the Gasut HaRuach applied to Elam, right, versus applying to Bavel. I mean, that before we thought Aniyut meant poverty, right, real poverty, monetary poverty. That did end up in Bavel and not in Elam. So we thought they had the Gasat HaRuach. The Gemara says, no, you're misunderstanding the word Aniyut. Aniyut means Aniyut b'Torah, spiritual Aniyut. In spiritual Aniyut, Bavel far outpaced, wealth, spiritual wealth, Bavel far outpaced Elam. So now,
you kind of say that the idea that it landed in Bavel and moved to Elam, right, as we say that in Bavel, they might have been physically poor, as they might have been impoverished.
I think it's a nice idea that their Aniyut can manifest itself in both ways. There's monetary Aniyut and spiritual Aniyut. It landed in Bavel, which landed them the monetary Aniyut, but didn't leave them the spiritual Aniyut. When it rolled over to Elam, the monetary Aniyut was already left in Bavel. The spiritual Aniyut is what only was left, and that got given to Elam, which was a much worse. I think it's a very nice idea, Shaul. Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's very nice. All right, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. We said, Zoy Lam Shazakta Lamod, Lazakta Lamed, my Bavel. So here it goes. What's Bavel? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Now we have a positive statement. You just saw a positive statement by Rabbi Yochanan, negative about Elam, positive about Bavel. Next, another one. Bululab and Mikra, Bululab and Mishnah, Bululab and Talmud. The Talmud Bavli comes the word Bavel, Livlol, means to mix up. What does that mean? It's mixed up in the Talmud Bavli. It's mixed up, Suki, Mishnayot, Talmud. It's all mixed up in one big, right, cholent. That's the Talmud Bavli. Here are the Tosus quotes, the famous Rabbeinu Tam. In this case, if you look at the top Tosus, Perish Rabbeinu Tam, Talmud shalanu anu putrim atzmenu. This is what you say by chamim, gemara vorezer, gemara kedushim. We say in lola mishalich adam shnotav shlish b'mikrash shlish b'shinah shlish b'shas. Person should split his life or really stay up into a third of Tanakh, third of Mishnah, and third of Gemara. Yet nobody does that. Nobody learns anything besides Gemara. So how could it be? So afal b'kein anu korim b'choyom. Right, but besides, he's saying that we get that from Talmud Bavli. Because Talmud Bavli is made up of Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. So it means they're made up of all three. We accomplish being Mishalish. Chayenu, between these three things, by learning through the Talmud Bavli. Nevertheless, Tosa says, even though we like this nice word of the Reino Tam, nevertheless, when we make the Birkas HaTorah in the morning, Alapikein, Achnu Korim B'chol Yom, right, we have to learn every morning, you have to learn Torah, Mishnah, and a Gemara. So actually, if you look, between the Mishnah Berurah brings down, the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch, it's a little different about what constitutes, right? What constitutes the Torah, a Mishnah, and a Gemara? Over here, it tells us close. Avogin akorim chol yom parshat tamid, Torah. V'shonim mishnat izu mikoman mishnayot. And the third thing is Rabbi Yishmael, which is the Braita. We do Birkat Kohanim, is the Torah. We do Elu Dvarim, which is a Mishnah. And we do the second Elu Dvarim, which is a Braisa. So that's how we do our Limud HaTorah. But we do it twice, so we do two cycles of Limud HaTorah, Mishnah, and Braita, and having Gemara. So, yeah, I was going to say two things. I was just about to say that maybe it is Kedai to say these things in the morning, because... Right now, so the Gemara says, but that's Rabbi Yochanan's view of Bavel. Again, he has two positive statements about Bavel. But then we have Machshavkim Oshivani Gemete Olam. Right, I was in the darkness. Hashem placed me in darkness like those that are dead. In Amram Mirmia, Zeh Talmudasho Bavel. This is the Talmud Bavel. All right, so now Rashi reads this over here. Let me, what does Rashi say over here? Shein nochin zeim zev etamudam safek miyadam. They don't treat each other nicely, and they don't come to the MS because they can't speak to each other properly, and they can't deal with each other properly. So you see, Rashi viewing this as a continuation of what we said before, just like Shaul said before. In the end, this is a progression, it ends up that the Talmud Bavli has a poor record over here, because if you continue to have this idea that the Talmud Chachamim don't treat each other well and don't speak to each other well, you're going to end up with a Talmud Bavli that's no good. So that's what Rashi says. Now that's a little difficult for a number of reasons. Number of reasons it's difficult. Very good. So exactly. We Paskin like the Talmud Bavli over the Talmud Yerushalmi all the time. So how could it be that we're talking about the Talmud Bavli in such a... very good. So one answer, the Rabbeinu Chananel brings the answer that Shul is suggesting over here, which is that since the Talmud Bavli was actually redacted and put together after the Talmud Yerushalmi, they were able to see what was in the Yerushalmi, and they could respond to that which was in the Yerushalmi. So just because they were later, that gives them more tokef, that gives them more samchut, because they were done later, and they could incorporate what was done in the Yerushalmi. That may be one answer to why, even though the Bavli might have been a poor quality, nevertheless, because they had seen the Yerushalmi, we give them more tokef in terms of psak. That's one possibility. The other possibility is to explain this memra differently. To explain this memra differently, if you look over here, the Rabbeinu Chananel says, what does that mean? Machshakani hoshivani kemet olam zetamu bavel klomer ta'amim elu shelot tzfunim ve'alumim kemayim amukim. It has tremendous depth, right? And it needs to be looked through carefully to understand the depths and the hidden meanings of the Talmud Bavli. That would be a much more positive statement. And that Rashi himself says in Gemara and Chagiga, Rashi gives that explanation of what this means. So that the Gemara would flow better. You have Rabbi Yochanan making positive statements about Bavel. Before we had negative statements about Bavel. Rabbi Yochanan changes the tide, and now we have more positive statements about Bavel. That would be a continuation of this positive statement about Bavel. That means that the Talmud Bavli has depth and secrets that need to be revealed in it. And there would be another positive statement about the Talmud Bavel, and I would explain why we pass them like it. The last possibility is the Ritva and Yoma that he quotes over here. If you look at the Ritva and Yoma, he says, he quotes that this is Rabbi Yirmiya Lashitato. Rabbi Yirmiya Lashitato, why? Because Rabbi Yirmiya believed that the Talmud Eretz Yisrael was much greater than that of Bavel. And he used to call the Talmud Chachamim in Bavel, Bavlim Tipshim. He used to say that you live in a dark place, therefore you make dark statements. I mean, that Rabbi Yirmi had a very, very negative view of the learning in Bavel, and he thought that you should go up to Eretz Yisrael and learn in Eretz Yisrael. We saw that the Gemara in Bava Batra with Rabbi Zeidel, who left Bechutz Lares, went to Eretz Yisrael, and he fasted 100 days to forget his Torah of Bavel in order to get it clear his mind for Torah to Eretz Yisrael. So you see that view that Torah to Eretz Yisrael was a much... Right, so that was it. Rabbi Huda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda argues on him, says that's not true. Rabbi Yehuda says it was usur to go up there to Yisrael. You have to stay in Bavel. And the Gemara in Ksubos, Rabbi Yehuda says stay in Bavel because the Torah there in Bavel is greater. Tamini Chachamim are in Bavel. So it's Rabbi Yirmiya l'shitato, but we don't necessarily paskin that way. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says the Talmud Bavli is greater, and therefore we would paskin like the Talmud Bavli. A last thing to note over here is that the Gemara might be addressing different time periods, which is very important. There were time periods in Bavel where Eretz Yisrael was dominant in terms both of its Torah learning and its freedom of religion, like in the time of Rabbi and then in later periods, whereas there were periods of time where the Bavel had better freedom and better Torah. And that might be the times that you're talking about, like Rava's time period. The Gemara mentions in many places that there were Gzeirot in Bavel. They weren't allowed to perform mitzvot v'ayetzia. They weren't allowed to light Chanukah candles. There were certain periods in the Bavel when the Amoraim lived there that the Jews suffered greatly and they had a hard time with the Limud Torah. It was difficult. And at that time, Eretz Yisrael was better. That might be what the first part of the Gemara is talking about. There was a later period, like Ravashi and Ravazi, when they actually redacted the Gemara. In that time period, the Torah Bavel had really thrived, and Torah Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael was having much more difficulty at that time. And in Bavel, they were much more freedom of religion and expression, and that's in that time when the Talmud Bavli was put together. And the reason we pass in like the Talmud Bavli is that that was put together in a time period when Bavel was ascendant in terms of its Torah learning and its freedom and its ability to have expression of halacha, whereas maybe our Gemara is addressing an earlier period of time where that difference was the opposite, meaning that Bavel was suffering and that of Torah Eretz Yisrael was ascended to that period of time. The Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos throughout Shas of Halan Halahu, which is which part refers to Eretz Yisrael, which was the Bavel, and Tosfos says that Rabbi Yochanan was speaking about Bavel, which makes Rashi says Rabbi Yochanan was, of course, Rabbi Yochanan speaking about Eretz Yisrael. So why is it? I'm saying, so why does it? As you said, because he had a lot of Talmidei Bavel in front of him. So that's why Rabbi Yochanan had many Talmidei Bavel in front of him, so it might have been that he had a lot of experience with those people from Bavel and exposure to Bavel. Alright. Mishnah, Amarlo. This actually, we quoted this Mishnah earlier. Neman alai Abba, Neman alai Avicha. Right, he says that I trust your father, my father, they can be a judge. Neman alai Shoshe Roei Bakar, you can have three shepherds be our judges. Remera Yachol Lachzorbo. If he accepts that as being the, like some sort of arbitration here, if he accepts it, Remera says you can back out afterwards. Chamirmi, Meni Yachol Lachzorbo, you can't back out of it. Hayach, Hayav Lachavir Shua. So he's Hayav to give a Shua to his friend, I mean to make a Shua. Romelo, Dorli Bechayir Shecha. He says, listen, you don't have to go to Beis Din to do this. Just take a shvuah on your head. Meaning, like, do some sort of shvuah that's here. It's an extra, you know, external to Beis Din. Take a shvuah and I'll accept it. But Meir Omer, Yecholak Zorba. He can decide afterwards he wants a shvuah in Beis Din. He can insist a shvuah in Beis Din. For me, Meir Yecholak Zorba. If he says he's going to accept it, that's it. It's done. He accepted it. All right, so now, Amar Avdimi, we saw this in the top of the second half of yesterday's daf. Amar Avdimi, Brei de Rav Nachum, Brei de Rav Yosef, Kolon de Kibbele Alei, Bechad. That over here we're talking about a case where he accepted him as one judge. What does that mean, accepted him as one judge? There are three judges here. Two of them are kosher judges. The third one is a judge being what? The father. Being the father over here, that is a judge. There's only one judge who's pasul, and that's the father over here. Not that this one father is one judge replacing three or replacing two, or one, you know, I mean, that's the only person that's arbitrating. No, we have two other individuals plus the father. They're making up the seating of the judges here. Why is that important? Tosfos actually mentioned it on yesterday's daf, but he mentions it again here on the Mishnah, because otherwise you would think that the Chachamim and Rav Meir only argue when there is tarte l'riusa, when there's two negative points. Two negative points being both that the father is chosen here was pasul, and number two is that he's replacing three judges. So that's tarte l'riusa. Kiddush here is not, well, not only when it's tarte l'riusa does Rav Meir say that you can be chozer. Even when it's chadal l'riusa, he says you can be chozer bo. And again, the Chachamim say that you can't be chozer bo, both in tarte l'riusa and chadal l'riusa. So that's what the purpose or the point of Rav Dimi here is. Actually, Tosfos mentioned it yesterday as well. Rabbi Yochanan, so now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Machloket b'machul lecha, aval etein lecha, divrei hakol yachol lachzor bo. There are two parties. When it comes to such an agreement here, that we're going to listen to your father, we're going to have some sort of arbitration here. There are two ways. One is that you are the defendant, and one is that you are the plaintiff. I mean, that you have a claim for money, the other one is making a claim of money. So when it comes to losing the case, and saying, listen, if I lose the case, I won't insist on getting the money from you, that's called machul lecha. I forgive you, you don't have to pay. The other part of the case is if I win the case, you're going to have to give me the money. Or I'm going to have to pay the money. Whichever way it's going. To obligate one to pay money, that you can't do. That, machlokes between the Chachamim and Rav Meir is only about machulecha. What you can do yourself when accepting the dayanim over here and saying, I'll forgive and you won't have to pay, that you can do. And that acceptance, everybody would agree, You don't have to, you can't be chozer bo. The question is only when I say I'm going to pay you. Does this based on this acceptance of these judges allow you to remove money from someone's possession and give it to someone else? So that's what Amar Rav Yudah Shmuel Machol B'Machol Lachav Matein Lachad Devi Akol Yachol Lachzor Bo. Everybody agrees in that case you can back out of it. Yochanan Amar Matein Lachav Machlokas. The Machlokas is actually when I give it to you, meaning that when I say I'm going to give you money actively, there is where the Machlokas is. What about Machol Lachav? What does Rabbi Yochanan say? So that's Ibayelu. Matein Lachav Machlokas Aval Machol Lachad Devi Akol En Yachol Lachzor Bo. But by Machol Lachav, everybody says you cannot back out of it. O Dilma, Bembezu Machlokes. There was a Machlokes in both. So Tashma, Dama Rava, Machlokes Betein Lachav, Machol Lachav, Devi Akon, Yechol Lachzor Bo. Here we go, Rava. Rava says that the Machlokes is Betein Lachav. That's what the Chamim and Rabbi Meir argue. But Machol Lachav, everybody agrees you can't back out of it because that you can be Mochel. That's not a problem. So he Amar Bishloma Betein Lachav, Machlokes, about Machol Lachav, Devi Akon, and Yechol Lachzor Bo. Rava, Dama, Rabbi Yochanan. Then Rava is following the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Eli Amar, if you say that Rabbi Yochanan means Bembezu Machlokes, Rava, Dama, come on. Who's Rava holding like? You know what the Mar says? Rava, Tama Dadavshe Kamar. Who says Rava has to hold like Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish? Rava has his own reasoning. Which make it actually that you have three opinions here. You have Rish Lakish who says, Machlok is by Macholucha, but by Yetem Lecha, everybody agrees you are allowed to be Choser. You have now Rabbi Yochanan who's saying Machlok is Ben. Betein lecha ben b'macholucha. Then you have Rava who suggests macholuchas betein lecha and b'macholucha devi akolin yachol zachorus. But you actually end up with three different opinions. Say it ve'ravach or b'tachlif the Rava question this position. Hayachayav lechay rosh shvua v'omer ler dorli b'chay roshecha says you're obligated to give a shvua and the guy says all right be poter your shvua taking this type of shvua I'll say okay. So we have there machlokas still in this case and yet my lab ba'otana nishba'im v'lo mishalmim. Isn't this a case where they are taking a shvua in order to be poter themselves and yet there's still a machlokas? So even a case of macholucha, we still see a machlokas in the Mishnah. How's this macholucha? Because if you take the shvua you're going to be patur from paying. That's the equivalent of saying macholucha. So avalei kamolucha. So one says, well, there are two types of shvua. Nishbayin v'niltin havo le'iketen lecha. Who says that the shvua here is a shvua to be patur? Maybe the shvua over here is a shvua to be chayav, to be mechayev, the individual to pay. And that's what Rabbi says. Rabbi says the shvua we're talking about in the Mishnah is a case where it's beten lecha. Shvua where I'm going to pay you money if you take this shvua. So that case is a shvua beten lecha. And I agree there's a machokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi says, if you, according to you, Rava, now we have two instances of Etein Lecha in our Mishnah. If their Machlokas is only be Etein Lecha, that means the first half of the Mishnah that talked about a case, same case of Etein Lecha. The Shvua case of the Mishnah is also talking about Etein Lecha. Now I have two parts of the Mishnah telling me the same Machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, both in cases be Etein Lecha. So why do I need that? Why do I need both of them? Gemara says, Tana Totole B'dat Achimim, Tana Totole B'dat Tzmo. Why? Because each one of them has to do with two different issues. The ratio of the mission is talking about where I'm entrusting the decision to another party. I'm entrusting the decision to a judge. The case over here is I'm agreeing to listen to this guy's shvua and accept his shvua. So that's a different mitzricha. We need both. If we only talked about giving over the judgment to a third party, Rabbi Meir over there, Rabbi Meir is a matzeh other bay. Rabbi Meir says you can back out of it. He's not going to give over. He's not going to have a gemira sadak based on someone else's decision. Who says he's going to make me right? I'm not really. I only like this decision if it's on my favor. But if it's not in my favor, I'm not going to like this decision. So he's not really gomer maknei. About all but that's small. Where he personally says, I'm going to accept the Shavua. Maybe Meir will agree that the Rabban, you can't back out. So there's Gemir Tadat, where you are the one accepting the Shavua. You can't say, oh, I don't really think he's going to take the Shavua. No, if you're willing to accept it, it means it's with you, and you have Gemir Tadat to accept it. If you only told me about the case of Shavua, in that case, Rabban say you can't back out of it. In the case where you give over the right to someone else to make the decision, the Rabban will agree to Rabbi Meir and say, there's no Gemir Tadat, and you can back out of it. Therefore, we need both halves in the Mishnah. Alright, now, we're now going to introduce a new machlokas. And again, here, there's a problem with Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, where previously we saw there was machlokas between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan about the mission. Now we're going to have a machlokas between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Our Rish Lakish machlokas lifnei Gemara Din. Machlokas here is only before Gemara Din. Aval achar gemar din, diri hakol in yechol lachzor bar. After gemar din, it's over. You can't, after the decision is made, say, no, I don't like this decision, I'm backing out. That doesn't work. Once you, before the decision is made, you can say, I don't like this, I want to go to court. But once the decision is made, it's over, the arbitration's done, you can't back out. Yochan Amar, achar gemar din machlokes. Rabbi Yochanan says, even after the, or I don't know if it's even. Rabbi Yochanan says, after machlokas, there's machlokas even after the conclusion of the case. So Gemara says, Ibailo, Acha Gemara Din machlokas, Avalifne Gemara Din, Divya Kol Yachol Akzorba. Is it after Gemara Din, everybody, that's the machlokas beforehand, everybody agrees you can back out? Or Dilma, Bein Bezu machlokas. So guess who we're going to bring again? Tashma, Doma Rabba. We'll bring Rabba to prove the statement of Yochanan. If he accepted himself a karovu pasul before the gemar din, he can back out of it. After gemar din, he can't back out of it. If you explain Rabbi Yochanan as saying that after the gemar din machlokas, before gemar din divrei akol, Rabba damar Rabbi Yochanan, then Rabba's falling in the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Valibet to Rabbanan, going according to Rabbanan. Elayir Mart, Bein Bezu, Machlokes. If you say Bein Bezu, Rabba Damar, come on. Rabba's holding like, oh, he's not holding like Rabbi Yochanan, he's not holding like Reish Lakish. Little secret, he could have held like Reish Lakish according to Rabbi Meir. It would have worked that way. So Tosas and Mash, you deal with that in a second. Elav, Shmamino, Lachar Gmar Din, Machlokes. It must be that Rabbi Yochanan means only the Achar Gmar Din is a Machlokes, but before Gmar Din, it's Divrei Akol. Why don't you ask him the question? What's the question here? Why does the Gemara answer the same way it did before? Rova time of the Nafshe Kama. Why did the Gemara over here all of a sudden say, oh, if it's Rova, it must be going according to Rabbi Yochanan? So Rashi and Tosfos both answer the same thing. First of all, they both explained that Rova's position could have been Reish Lakish and Rabbi Meir. The way the Gemara didn't go that way is because we don't want Rova to be Aliba the Hilchasa. But if you set him up as Reish Lakish and Rabbi Meir, you have him losing on both. Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Halacha Rabbi Yochanan. Number two, you have, right, Reish Lakish and Chachamim. The Chachamim is like the Chachamim. So why would you set him up as Reish Lakish or Rabbi Meir? We don't want to set Rabbi up that way. That's number one. Number two is, Tosfos points out that Rabbi Rova in other places says, Halacha ki Reish Lakish betalata. Halacha is like Reish Lakish in three instances, which implies that everywhere else, Halacha is not like Reish Lakish, which means that he can't hold like Reish Lakish over here. Number three, why didn't they say like before that Rova time of the Nafshe Kamar? It's because the wording of his statement is different. Before, in the previous case, Rova was explaining the Mishnah. So when he's explaining the Mishnah, it could be that he's making an independent statement about the explanation of the Mishnah that's different than Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Over here, Rova's not explaining the Mishnah. Rova's giving a psak halacha. So Rova is giving a psak halacha. He has to be following an opinion before that explained the Mishnah. Otherwise, he should have explained the Mishnah and then given a psak. The fact that he just gives a psak halacha means that he's relying on a previous statement of explanation in the Mishnah. Who's that explanation? That has to be Rabbi Yochanan. That's why Rashi also say that Rabbi, over here, the Gemara does not say Rova time of the Nafshe Kamar because he's being a psak halacha, not explaining the Mishnah. All right, now, next. Shalach lei Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista here, bar Rav Yitzchak, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, Yalamdeinu Rabbeinu, teach us Rabbeinu, Lifnei Gemar Din Machloket, Olacha Gemen Machlokes, right, meaning actually our question, V'alacha Gedivrei Mi, and who's Alacha like? So Shalach lei L'achar Din Machlokes, only after the Gemar Din is there Machlokes, Alacha Gedivrei Chachamim. Basically, this is what Rava, the second halacha that we saw from Rava, it's the same din. Basically, it's Rabbi Yochanan, Aliba, the Chachamim. Rabbi Yochanan says Machlokes only after Gemar Din, and it's the Chachamim. Vashi Amar, Hochei Shalach Lei. This was the question. Betein Lecha Machlokes, Oba Machol Lecha Machlokes. I mean, the previous Machlokes of Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel. Who's Halacha Light? Valocha Dibre Mi. Shach Halach Lei, Betein Lecha Machlokes, that the Machlokes is only by Betein Lecha, Valocha Kedivre Chachamim. So Betein Lecha is the Machlokes. Sounds from here, it's not clear from here whether what they say about Machlokha, but the implication would be by Machlokha there is no Machlokas, and Halacha is like Rava in the previous Gemara, not like, or possibly not like Rabbi Yochanan. The question whether Rava was holding like Rabbi Yochanan or not, right? So the Halacha there, now he's stating Halacha like Rava's statement before, whether Rabbi Yochanan held that or not is a question of the Gemara. So where it says, Besura Matnehachi. In Surah they learned the questions this way. But Pumbadita Manehochim, Pumbadita said the question was this. I'm Rav China Bar Shlamia, Shokhulei Mi Bei Rav to Shmuel. They sent from Rav to Shmuel. Yilam Deinu Marenu, Lifnei Gemar Din, V'Kanu Miyado, Mai. Before Gemar Din, but they did a Kinyan. What's the Din? Shalachlei En Lachar Kinyan Klum. If the lack before a Gemar Din was the lack of Gemirat Adat, the whole purpose of a Kinyan is to generate Gemirat Adat. So if the problem, why we say there's no machlokes before Gemar Din, is because there was no Gemar Tadat, and everybody agrees you hold a chok sorbo, once you have kinyan, you've overcome the problem of no Gemar Tadat. The kinyan creates the Gemar Tadat. If you have a kinyan, there's no backing out anymore. And that's what Shmuel is suggesting over here. It's funny that, I'm just pointing it out, that the Surah learned this, Pumbedita learned this way, but Pumbedita, their question has nothing to do with, I mean, it's not even on the same plane as what was talked about before. Before, they were just speaking about questions about the two machlokot that we saw until this point. Over here, this surah, Manahoche, is dealing with different parties, number one, and a totally different question, which is how does kinyan fit into this picture? Right? So it's interesting. Generally, when we have surah Manahoche, they're talking either about the same case, or they're, you know, same case with different parties, or same party is a different question. Over here, you have neither, which is that it's a totally different issue that's being raised over here. It's just interesting as a whole. Right, next. These are the psulim. Tosis points out right away, we're talking about, there were some that were goresh in this Mishnah, avadim, but he says avadim are pasul midoraisa. And this Mishnah is clearly only addressing psulim, mi derabanan. So zeh lehen psulim, am sechek pekubia, gamblers, v'amilve v'ribit, right, someone who lends with interest, mafriche yonim. Also here, we'll have to discuss what these are, some sort of racing horses of some sort, betting on horses. Socharei shvit, those that transact in perot shvit. Rabbi Shimon b'tchila yu korim aton osfei shvit. They used to bring in some fruits of shvit and then sell them. Shirabu anasin, when it came to the point when there was everybody was doing this and started to become a business, then chazula krotan socharei shvit, a negative term, meaning that they were transacting in shvit, perot shvit, meaning they were doing wrong. He qualifies our mission, says that these people are only pasul and this is their only means of making a living. If this is just a hobby or a side business, then they're not psulim. So obviously the question over here is, why are we worried about them? And Rashi pointed out, they're kain gazlanim. We worry about people here who are somewhat taking away money that doesn't belong to them, or they're doing things that are wrong. And we see that they're willing to be violate an isur in order to get money. They're willing to violate isur to get money, then already we don't trust them to be in cases. Why? Because they might change what they say for money as well. Right? They might be influenced by money. And we don't want them. We want edim. We want people, dayanim, who are, right, not affected by betza, by money. So these people are precluded from being edim, or of course being dayanim, because of their, they are influenced by monetary means to either to be violated to Surim, or again, we might suspect them to also speak falsely in this case. Someone who's gambling, what's the problem here with gambling? It's a problem here that there's a lack of Gemar Tadat. When you gamble, you think you're going to win. The other party thinks he's going to win. Nobody really thinks they're going to lose. So there's no Gemar Tadat in the Kinyan. Talking about that, that's not a smachta. That's full Gemar Tadat. The problem with Zair is that they're doing things that are not productive. What's the difference in him? Obviously, the difference between them is he has another profession. If he gambles just as a hobby or as a side thing, then obviously that does not posel him. If gambling is his profession, then obviously that's a problem according to both opinions. Amara says, well, our Mishnah, the Tanan, Amar Yehuda, Imatayz, Manchein Lehem Umanut, Elohu, Abay Yesh Lehem Umanut, Shlohu, Kshirim. Alma Taimed the Masnisen, the reason our Mishnah is, Yishum Yishubo Shalom. So he says, Shalom Hu. So Kasha the Rami Barchamo. We say, there's a problem for Rabbi Barchamo. Rabbi Barchamo said the Mishnah is talking about Asmachta, and here we see Rabbi Yehuda says the Mishnah is talking about Yishubo Shalom. V'chitem Aplige Rabbanan Aleit Rabbi Yehuda. So when they say, that's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion of the Mishnah, Rabbanan disagree, and they think the problem of the Mishnah is Asmachta. Anytime Rabbi Yehuda uses the term "imatayim v'meh" in the Mishnah, in the Lefarish Divrei Chachamim, he's explaining the Divrei Chachamim. He's not cholek of the Chachamim. So you see over here what the lashon he used in our Mishnah is "imatay." "Imatay" means Rabbi Yehuda is explaining the position of the Chachamim. Rabbi Yochanan says "imatay Lefarish v'meh Lachlok." When he says "imatay," it's to explain the Chachamim. "V'meh" is to argue. But both of them agree that "imatay" is a lashon of explanation of the Chachamim. So that means that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim don't disagree. It says, what do you mean? You're asking a question from Rabbi Yochanan and Rishu ben Levi on Rami Bar Chama? Rami Chara doesn't hold on that. He thinks Eimatai and Bameh both mean that he argues. So he says, no, Karami, Masar Pligi, Masar Lo Pligi. They one says they argue, one says they don't argue. V'lo pligi, and they don't argue. V'atanyu, have a braisa. Ben sheish lo umano, ben shlohu. whether he has a right, another no other profession, or does have another profession, or is it pasul? So who is that like? If that can't be like Rabbi Yehuda, so it must be it's like the Chachamim. So we find a Braisa that has a different opinion that argues on Rabbi Yehuda. So it must be that's Rabbi Yehuda. The one says, no, how will Rabbi Yehuda mishum Rabbi Tarfon? That's Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Tarfon. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer mishum Rabbi Tarfon, Olam, Eina Echad Mehem Nazir, Vish No Nitnan, Zirut El Afla. Right, that they, Nazir, if you have two people sitting down, and they look and they see a guy coming towards them, one of them says he is a Nazir, the other one says that he's not a Nazir. So one of them says, I take a Neder Zirut, right, that if he is a Nazir, I'm a Nazir. The other one says, I take a Neder Zirut, if he's not a Nazir, then I'm a Nazir. If you're wrong, I'm a Nazir. Whatever, they did it in some way that there was, triggers. So he says, none of them are Nazirim, why? Nazirut has to be absolute and clear in its definition. Over here you say when he's a Nazir, he's not sure he's going to be a Nazir. That's not hafla. Hafla is when you make a definitive statement, I'm going to be a Nazir. His whole bet is he's not going to be a Nazir. He thinks he's right, and he's saying that I'm not going to be. So Rashi says over there, because of that, we say that even though that he makes a statement, we consider asmachta, we don't say that because of the safek, we say that it doesn't come through. So here now the Gemara is comparing the hafla'a by nizirut to asmachta by kinyanim. The problem with that is that the word hafla'a appears in nizirut and it's a specific demand of a nazir. Now there is hafla'a, they have to speak clearly and have gemir to dat. So Tosfos asks that question, and he says that nevertheless we do learn out from nazir anyway, because that the pasuk in Nazir is telling us what you need for a gemir tadat. It's not unique to Nazirut, but rather an explanation of what it means to have gemir tadat. So that's what he says. Shiny hocha the gali kra mishum da'al lo mefarish bekra mahi afla. El gali lan kra d'bein in afla av liyadin mahi afla. What's afla? Afla is a clear and clear and lucid statement about what you're going to do. And that is explaining what Gemira Tadat is. And therefore, the Gemara extrapolates from Nazirut to over here to explain what Gemira Tadat is. Since we don't know, do we have to explain what Hafla'a is? Hafla'a in the end is Gemira Tadat. So once you've explained what Hafla'a is Gemira Tadat, now we know what Gemira Tadat is. And therefore, if you lack it by Nazirut, you're also going to lack it over here.
Just want to take a quick look at the Rishonim here. If you go back to Rashi, when Rav Sheshes comes along and says, Koki hai gavna lava smachtihi, what is an asmachta then according to Rav Sheshet? Rav Sheshet says our case over here in the Mishnah or Misaki B'chukubio is not a case of asmachta. So what is a case of asmachta and why is this not a case of asmachta? So Rashi gives an explanation and says the reason that this is not asmachta is because it's totally out of his hands. It's something that's not as in control. It's basically a game of chance. A game of chance, that's not called asmachta because nobody believes they can influence the outcome of such a game. And therefore when they put their money on, they know that they are a chance to lose it and they're gomer amachta midat, the money that they put on the table. It's the last Rashi on the bottom of Amud Bet, Chavdan Amud Bet. So what is the case of Asmachta? Actually, the case that's quoted here is probably not the right case, as Tosas points out. It's another case, but it's a case where a person is Sumech Alodavar, to Savur Kose Biadilasot. It's a person who relies on his ability to do something, or his ability to influence an outcome. In that instance, that's what's called Asmachta, because the Asmachta here is that he really doesn't believe he's ever going to come to the outcome where he won't win, or that he won't end up with what he is promising he will do, because he thinks he's in control. So Rashi says, if you think you're in control, then there's no asmach, there is an asmachta because you aren't gomer dat to be koneh or makneh, because you believe you're going to be able to influence the outcome, you'll never have to do anything. On the other hand, our case over here, where you're talking about games of chance, in games of chance, you know from the upfront that you have no influence over how the outcome is. The fact that you spin a dice, or that random number is going to be picked out, that you have no influence over, and therefore there is no asmachta in this case. Tosfos quotes the Rashi and points out the difficulty in the case that he quotes, but then amends that to the case that it should be written there. But then he says he doesn't think, based on the Gemara's other Gemara's, he thinks that there's a problem with Rashi's explanation. And therefore he first brings the explanation of the Rabbeinu Tam, which is on the top of Chofei Amud Aleph. It says, near the Rabbeinu Tam, it's the narrower lines of the Tosfot. The only time it's called an asmachta is when you can't win or you can't profit from the situation. So something, an issue, like a game of chance where you have an equal chance of losing and winning, or you have a chance of winning and chance of losing, I mean, you could profit and you could lose. In that case, a person gomer makne, he gives over the property entirely because he has a chance he's going to make some money, he's going to be profitable here. Okay, maybe the chances aren't as great, but the winnings are bigger. So he says, if it's a chance that I win, then I'm willing to be makne my money. The other hand, when's to consider an asmachta? And an asmachta is a case where the
only thing you have from this is downside. So for instance, in a case where he's mishalish the shtar, and for instance, he paid already half the shtar, and he gives the shtar to as over to a third party, a trustee, and says, if I don't pay by such and such time, give this back to the malveh. Basically, what's going to happen now is if he pays on time, then he'll pay back the loan and it'll be done. If he doesn't pay on time, then the loan's going to, the document will go back to the creditor and he'll have to pay the whole amount again. So the only thing he has from this is downside. So when there's only downside available to him, that's when we say, asmachta lukanyor, this is an asmachta, and therefore you can't be koneh, because the person's never gomer dat. Where he thinks there's profit, where he thinks there's upside, then he's gomer makne his money, gives it over and says, look, maybe I'll win, maybe I'll lose, but there's a chance I'll win. When a person only has downside from the situation, it's clear that he's not making that effort, making that attempt in order to make money, therefore he's not gomer dat. The only reason he's doing this is to make the other person believe him. So when he says it, he's just saying it with the assumption it's never going to happen, or it's never going to be, he's going to have to pay it. And that's exactly what's an esmachta. There it's mokanyo, there it doesn't work, because that is an esmachta. He's not gomer dat. He's simply trying to make the other person rely on his statement, because there's only downside for him. Why would he ever make or enter into such agreement when there's only downside? The only reason he would do that is to make the other person believe him. And therefore, in that case, Rabbeinu Tam says, esmachta lokanyo. The Tosfos asks, mi ukashal perish Rabbeinu Tam. There's still a problem to catch on Rabbeinu Tam. So then the reformulates what Tosfos brings in a number of places, that you're actually three different cases that will have different outcomes in terms of Asmachta. He does it here, Baba Metzia and Baba Batri brings it again. That he also says that the Iker is compared to Rashi, that the basic differentiation is like Rashi sets over here, that the most important being that when you have absolutely no control over the situation, when you cannot influence the outcome of the game, in that instance you're definitely Gomer Makna, because you don't think there's anything left for you to do. So if you are willing to enter such a game or willing to enter such a situation, it's clearly because you are Gomer Dat, that you're paying in, understanding that you have no influence over the outcome and you're playing a game of chance, or you're understanding that there's just odds about whether you'll win or not, and therefore you're Gomer Makna and you give over your money without any consideration or withholding of the money. But that's Gomer Dat. Ah, Rashi's other side, which says when you are in control, then there is an asmachta. When you think you're in control, then you think you can influence the outcome, then the current Rashi, that's an asmachta, and it's lokanya, because you think you're not, you're going to control the situation, and you're never going to come to that payment, therefore you're not gomer makne. So Tosfos says we have to bifurcate that, we have to split that into two different categories. That is, it depends what you say when you're in control. If you are totally in control, and the situation or the agreement that you come to is a normal agreement. So for instance, if I leave this field barren and I don't plant it, I will have to pay you for that year anyway, as if it was planted, or what the value would have been if it was planted. So in that case, number one, you are in control. Number two, that is a reasonable agreement to come to. That makes sense. That if you don't plant it, the owner of the field is going to lose. And therefore, if you don't plant it, you're going to have to pay him the money that he would have made otherwise. So remember, when it's in your control, it's a reasonable agreement. And a person's gomer makne dato. He can say, I can make the decision. If I want to plant, I plant. If I don't plant, I don't plant. And I'll pay the money. But that's a reasonable thing. But the other possibility is, with the other situation that we came up with, is where it is in your control, but you're gazim. Right, it's an exaggerated situation. You're making it so that the outcome is not fair, or something that's beyond what should be normal. So again, we go back to the case that we suggested before, where you say, listen, I paid half the loan off. Now, give this shtar, well, I'm going to give the shtar over to this third party, this trustee, and then tell the trustee, if I pay by such and such a time, then we'll rip up the shtar. If I don't pay, hand back the shtar to the creditor, and I'll lose. I'll have to repay the whole loan. So again, that's a gazim. That is something that is not a normal agreement, and not a normal business transaction that would come to. Why is he saying that? Or why is he allowing that to happen? Because he wants the other person to believe that he's going to pay. So it isn't his control to pay. But the only reason he's coming, entering into the agreement, or agreeing to have to pay more money later if he fails to pay on time, is because he thinks he's going to be able to pay on time. That's the case of asmachta, because there, he relies on his ability to control the outcome of the situation. He's only entering the agreement because he wants the other person to believe him, not because he thinks he's going to have to pay the money. And that's a classic case of asmachta. So in these cases, all these types of cases where a person makes an extraordinary promise or an agreement that would not be a normal, considered to be a normal business transaction, in those cases, that's where we call asmachta kanya. So Tosfos has the two extremes. And again, when you're zero control over it, in that instance, right, it's not asmachta. If you have total control and it's a normal agreement, then it's also not asmachta. Both of those cases, a person would be gomer and midato, and he would put his money on and say, look, I understand what the risks are. I understand what's going to happen. On the other hand, when it's a situation where he is somewhat in control, or he has some control, but he's exaggerating the outcome, or again, a case where he thinks he's in control and he thinks he can influence the outcome, and that's just not the case. In those instances, we're going to call that an asmachta, and those will be the problematic cases where a person would be considered gezel mi divrehem. As far as the psak halacha, I just want to do it quickly. The Rambam is very interesting in this case. The Rambam seems to be soter himself. It's very difficult. The Achronim point this out, and how to reconcile this Rambam. Because the Rambam, when it comes to dinei gzela, if you go to the Rambam and dinei gzela, he quotes our situation over here. He says, dinei gzela halacha yud, hamasachek bekubya. Explains what the game is, and he says, gezel mi divrehem. This gezel mi derabanan, afal pi sheretzon abalim lo akach. Even though it was an agreed upon, they were playing a game of chance, and everybody agreed. Hov lakach mamon chaveru bichinam, since he took his money from his friend without ever any compensation or any consideration in return. The derech schok vatel, is a gezel. It's done in a joking or playful manner. That's gezel. So Rambam turns mesechek bekubia blanket as gezel. Later on, the Rambam in Hilchos Eidut, when he quotes the issue of Mesachei Bekubya, he says over there, V'chein Mesachei Bekubya is Pasul Eidut, but that's only Behu Shalot Yelo Umanot Elohu. That's only if he has no other alternative way of making a living, that is, Parnoso. He doesn't have any other Parnoso, and this is the way he's making his living. But if he has other Parnoso, then it's okay. But it seems to be a steer in the Rambam. The Rambam only says the qualification of having another Parnoso when it comes to Hilchot Eidut. But Hilchot Gezele, he doesn't bring that qualification down. Sounds like from the Rambam, Mesachei Bekubya period is gezel, but to be puzzled, you do it. It's only when it's not, when it's your major, when it's your main form of parnasa. Seems to be a stira in the Rambam. The Magid Mishneh in Ilchot Gezela points out this stira. He doesn't understand how the Rambam came to these two different conclusions. There's actually a Meirot Einayim in Chosh Mishpat which tries to explain the difference between them. It's the best answer for, or to try to reconcile the Rambam is actually in the Shut Marif in Simon Chav Dalet. He gives such a suggestion. He says, "Miu sfir le the Rav Sheshes, then he do avi gezel gamur." Even though it's not gezel gamur, mikom mikom avi avak gezel midrabanan. So he creates a new category. We had a category of gezel doraisa, a category of gezel midrabanan, and now he creates a new category called avak gezel midrabanan. I mean, that's something that we look unfavorably upon. It's not exactly gezel, but it's something that leads to improprieties. It's something that leads to bad behavior or bad midot. Veitz beisura. So there's still an Isur involved with it, Miha. So that's how he's going to explain the Rambam. It's not going to consult a psul eidut because it's not gezel midrabanan, it's not gezel midoraisa. But nevertheless, we don't want you participating or making this your activity. Now, ki lele emuna telahu, if he doesn't have any other parnasa besides this, then the Rambam is going to say that the aloha is that you're psul eidut. But if you don't, if you're not, this is not your ikar parnasa, you don't do this on the side as a hobby, then you're not psul eidut because we don't have an issue of gezel. Nevertheless, the Rambam is paskening like Rav Sheshes. He's back in the Rav Sheshes, but he's saying, even according to Rav Sheshes, there still is this problem of not being a suk in the gambling, because even though truthfully it's not gezel mi divrei, still it's not the nicest way to interact. It does not develop the best midot. It's not something that we look favorably upon, because as the Rambam says, it's derech schok vatel. The environment is not a positive environment. And number two is, because of that, there's not always a clear gemir tadat. There is gemir tadat, but it's a little bit reluctant type of gemir tadat. And there we tell you to stay away from it. And based on this Shut Marif, the Mishneh Berurah actually brings down, it's in Siman Shin Chav Bet, in the Mishneh Berurah, he brings down this concept that Kubia, who avak gezel mi divrehem, shein dato lakno bikinyan gemor lachia soraf bechol. So he brings down this concept that the Shut Marif tries to introduce here, that there's actually this third category, even though it's not gezel mi divrehem, nevertheless it's called avak gezel mi divrehem, and even according to Rav Sheshet, when it has nothing to do with your umanut, it's not your panasa, nevertheless we're going to discourage, or we are going to tell people not to do this because there is negativity associated with this form of goral or this form of exchange and gambling or agreements, because never, even though it's not gezel mi divrehem, it's still something that we do not favor. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam and follows the Rambam Shita that a mesachik bekubya is a equivalent to a gazlan or gezel mi divrehem, and therefore one should not participate in mesachek bekubya. The Ramah then quotes our Tosfot over here. The Tosfot that this is in Shulchan Aruch Chosh Mishpat Simin Reish Zayin Sif Gid Gimel. There, the Ramah quotes our Tosfot the three different approaches to asmachta, and then he gives alternatives that when it's not considered masmachta, he starts to bring down. Like for instance, the Mordechai who says that if the money is on the table beforehand, the gambling money is already on the table, and the person's already given up the money, then there's gemir tadat. If it's still in his pocket, then we don't say there's gemir tadat, right? And then he has to give it over. So the differential is about when the Gemir Tadat happens. If it's before the game, then we say Gemir Tadat. If it's after the game, then we say the person's really not giving it over. He's only giving it over because he lost, and there really isn't Gemir Tadat. And then he brings a third opinion that says that even without all of that, it's not considered a problem. And he says that's the minhag. The minhag is that we do not consider Mesachik Bekubia to be Gezel Midivrahem, and therefore people get involved or can do it as long as it's not their Umanut, as long as it's not their major form of Parnassah. If you go to the halacha, the shutim comes out, for instance, like the lottery here in Israel. Are you allowed to participate in the lottery? The Yabi Omer in the Rabbi Yosef there gives a tshuva. He says clearly for the Sfaradim and Eidut Mizrach, it's problematic because the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are both consistent in saying that this is a case of Mesachik Bekubia, it's Gezel Midivrahem, and he should not be involved in it. He says even according to the Bnei Ashkenaz who follow the Ramah, who seems to indicate that Mesachik Bekubia is okay, he still suggests, even though that's the case, nevertheless, he doesn't think that it's so positive or so sure that that's what the Ramah meant. He says that the Rivash and the Tshuva says that the Mesachik Bekubia is Yisrael Chuliyama, even according to Rav Sheshes, even according to the Ramah. And it's just something that's negative. He says, he writes over here, which we know, the evils of gambling, Rabbayim, Achalalim, Hipil, Vatsumim, Kol Harugav. Right, meaning that it's killed many people gambling and it's left many bodies behind. I mean, it's something that we, even without the fact that it's not Gezel, there's still a negative social and impact on human life and impact on people's behavior that it's so detrimental that we don't want people being involved. And therefore, he says that he would encourage people not to be participating in such games or to be participants in these types of gambling or into the lottery itself because of these issues that are raised up. Mesachik Bekubia. Okay, we'll stop over here.